home. We are WNST. AM 1570, Taos of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We're going to be at the Beaumont on Tuesday of this week. We're going to have Councilman Pat Young. Also, my lawyer buddy Chad Koz is going to come on and discuss democracy in the United States of America. Pressure Lux, I got a handful of Lucky Sevens, as well as Whammy, in Catonsville. So we'll be there on Tuesday. I will have Raven scratch offs as well. They will be victorious Raven scratch offs. Also counting down our tastiness treats this week with the top four, number four, number three, number two, number one, all non-sponsors. One of them is actually a vegetable dish. Actually, two of them are, one of them is vegan. I think. Maybe not. I might have eggs or something like that in it. But nonetheless, deliciousness, tastiness, it's all brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness, which brings us to 27 years of WNST, 30 years, actually only been 29 years, 30th season of Ravens football, and Luke chronicling it from the teeny-weeny little Kevin Byrne press box up in the corner of the end zone, and I was monitoring on television. Luke, I'll say this, one thing from the other, lopsided score and all, but much more of a struggle. And I sort of predicted that. And when you look back, it's the first time the Ravens have won two in a row against the Browns in like 4 years. So it's not like this is a season sweep or just a thing. But now we have the Joe Burrow injury, the domination of the Browns, whatever the Steelers were, and whatever that kid was thinking when he let the ball go over his head into the end zone. But the Ravens are the dominant team in this division, and now they stand to look at Detroit and Kansas City and say, where are we going? But the measuring stick on Sunday is, I don't know. Ravens offense didn't look like the way you want it to look, that's for sure.
Well, but we also acknowledge that Cleveland has a good defense. And I think that was kind of lost last year with everything they went through with the quarterback position. And look, I'm not going to shed any tears for Myles Garrett because he re-upped. He consciously said, I'm going to stay here. And he's making a lot of money in order to do it. But you look at what kind of player he is. And I mean, if there's a better defensive player in the league, I mean, it's a very short list. I mean, for my money, he might be the best, but you look at it every year and you look at their defense and you see the job they've done, relatively speaking. When you're talking about Lamar Jackson and this Ravens offense, when it's been at its best over the last 5 to 6 years, it's always relative terms that you're referring to. But they've had some success against the Ravens. They've had some success at not stopping Lamar, but slowing him down. And a big part of that is that front that's led by Myles Garrett. So they really did a good job in that first half of making things very difficult. I mean, the Ravens never got the run game going. I mean, you look at the final numbers, Derrick Henry had 23 yards, and 8 of those came on his longest run of the day. I mean, he did nothing. Lamar was bottled up very well. I mean, they, for as much pressure as they got on Lamar Jackson, Lamar only took off twice, right?
Well, I was gonna say they're not playing the option the way they did before Derrick Henry. Doesn't the offense looks different than it did 3, 4 years ago in that way, in regard to not Lamar's ability to run, but their ability to disguise it, or perhaps if you have the right front four, your ability to cage it a little better, maybe so much that it's not, hey, you're going to play that in the first quarter? Watch me run in the second quarter. We're going to play that all day long. That ball, I'm going to hide the ball and we're going to trick you. There wasn't a lot of tricking going on. You're right? I mean, and I don't think there is as much tricking as there is. Here comes Derrick Henry, stop it.
Well, I mean, I think there's still plenty of deception and read options, stuff like that. But yeah, it's different. But at the same time, very few defenses out there have Myles Garrett and Mason Graham, who was what, the fifth overall pick in this year's draft. I mean, at
And
defensive
played the part to
tackle.
me 2 weeks into this, right?
Yeah.
Even though
So,
we know who he is. We hey, yeah.
I mean, Isaiah McGuire's done a nice job for them. So, like, that's a good front. And they see the Ravens twice a year. And to your point, yeah, this offense has evolved with Derrick Henry, but it's not like it's completely different. That what's different, the most. The different part about it compared to before was Derrick Henry carries the ball 300 plus times a year, whereas before it was J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, or Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards, right? I mean, you kind of had a little bit more of a timeshare, which also included a few more design runs for Lamar Jackson,
Well, Lamar
which.
didn't run around 8 or 10 times on Sunday either, because
No.
that's what it takes for him to break free 2 or 3 times and have that 32-yard run where he embarrasses you. He embarrassed him. He has his plays, dude. I
Of
mean,
course. I mean, he's
every
the
week
best.
he has a play, right?
He's
He
the
had a
best
play
at that.
Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, of course, but this is a it's a really good Browns defense. I mean, their offense stinks. Their offense stinks, and I feel for Joe Flacco, and at some point in time it's going to make sense for them to go to Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. I mean, it's going to happen at some point because Joe's 40 and they're not playing for anything with Joe being their quarterback. But their defense is really good. So that again is to me why it was so important that the Ravens got the early contributions. I mean, not just early, I mean all day long from their defense and for their special teams to step up. I mean, they got the punt return, they had the blocked punt by Jake Hummel, which put them on a short field. I mean, they averaged 3 yards per play in the first half. I mean, it's not as though this offense was humming. Now they got going in the second half, and in the second half, they took full advantage of the short fields, and the passing game got going. I mean, it's funny to say this. I mean, it didn't feel like Lamar had his A game, and you look up and he had 4 touchdowns and no, I mean, easily should have, frankly, should have had an interception in the end zone there that Cleveland just dropped. But that's Lamar though, like. Even when it doesn't feel like he plays incredible, amazing football, you look at the numbers and, oh, ho-hum, 4 touchdown passes, right? I mean, it's hilarious to kind of think about it in those terms, but that's what this offense is. So that's why I said, if you're taking something away from this game in a game that they fully expected to win in some level, some comfortable degree, some comfortable fashion, for me, it was, hey, your defense rebounded in an emphatic way, albeit no one's confusing the Browns for the Bills. We get that. No one's confusing Joe Flacco at age 40 to Josh Allen, but they did that, and their special teams contributed in very positive ways as well. Now, it wasn't perfect. I mean, they still had some plays here and there that you kind of look at and say, hey, you'd like to have that back. I mean, the defense, they give up another touchdown on a deflection. I mean, how Marlon Humphrey doesn't pick that off there. But that's a bad luck, but they played really well, and that was good to see. And I think just from a mental standpoint, I mean, when you hear, I said this to you when we were kind of breaking down the game Thursday and Friday going into the weekend, that some of the reaction from the Ravens defense, you sensed a little more urgency than you would expect after one game, one bad game. It's easy to say that. The Ravens, the 2000 Ravens gave up 36 points to Jacksonville in week two, right? It
Well,
happens.
they're playing a team in
But
8 days that scored 52. So
no
the
doubt.
defense,
I mean,
defense is step forward this week is better. Seeing
well,
Joe Flacco and steamrolling them pretty good and bottling them up most of the day.
they better be ready. But and part of that is also Marlon Humphrey left with a groin issue, Kyle Van Noy hamstring. I mean, they're going to be a little more banged up. Now you hope on the offensive side, Isaiah likely started practicing at the end of last week, so maybe he's
Well, the
there
Bengals
and
aren't a contender anymore, right? So because of their quarterback,
I
right?
mean,
So
it's hard to say. As Sunday night, and you and I are going off of at this point, as you and I are speaking in real time, the speculation and the reports Sunday night. I mean, if Joe Burrow has to get surgery and he's out 3 months,
it's over. That's the season.
I mean, look, I think Jake Browning is a good backup quarterback, but come on, if he has to miss a month or a month and a half, they might be able to stay afloat. Although you kind of look at their schedule and all of that, and you say, who are they going to be able to hold on? But
Well, the biggest
there's
news of the week for the Ravens for me was Joe Burrow getting hurt.
that's fine. And
That's bigger
look,
news than anything else because
this kind of
that when you start to eliminate the teams and the risk board, that matters a lot. And
sure.
the Browns just everybody listen, you go back, I did hours of radio last week. Michael Regei came on, I had Munch Bishop on, Bernard hit on me. I didn't have him on, my former producer from Sporting News, but he sent me some texts with his bulldog and said, this is how bad they are. I'm 30 years into this Browns thing, 27 years into this, and like we're doing our 30th anniversary thing and trophies coming out, and I'm thinking, man, it's one thing to be the Buffalo Bills and to have come close and to be,
have 17 years of ineptitude, but at least have some hope again, or some other places. Even the Lions. We talk about these Rust Belt teams. Lions, Browns, Bills, never won. None of them.
Yeah.
And we're playing them all back to back to back to back to back this month, right? And I tell you, man, the Browns thing is so tragically hopeless. And watching this at the beginning of another year where they won three last year, and poor Joe Flacco running, and I no one loves Joe more than me, but my God, the team's terrible. No, I
Oh.
mean, maybe that's part and parcel him being the quarterback at this point, but I mean, give me Njoku and me, I don't even know what other spare parts I'd even take.
Well, on offense. I mean, they have a good defense. I mean, we've talked about that, but look. I mean, the Browns are the only team that probably would be starting Joe Flacco at this point in time. I mean, that's just the reality of him being 40 years old, 'cause you kind of look at it in terms of like, okay, good teams need better than what Joe is at this point in his career, and bad teams, generally speaking, either have someone they've drafted earlier than where the Browns, these are mid-round guys. In the case of Shedeur Sanders, a fifth-round pick, but generally speaking, you're going with someone younger with the thought that okay, this guy has a chance to maybe be good in the next couple of years. So it's a very select group of teams that even have any interest in Joe, right? Beyond a backup, right? I mean, if he was a backup, that's a different story. So, but you just look at they're bad. I mean, I'm kind of mincing words here to try to not
See, I'm
sound too.
wondering if he ran the Bengals right now, whether that'd be better than Jake Browning.
You
You know
know,
what I mean?
I don't think Jake Browning's bad. I as backup
I don't know.
quarterbacks
I'm just
go.
saying whether Joe would look more capable. And
You
that
just,
takes me back to a year and a half ago with
I'll say
Cleveland.
no.
The only reason Joe's on the field is it was the Cleveland Browns who employed him a year and a half ago and caught lightning in a
He was
bottle.
out of the league,
They,
yeah.
right. I mean, and the Colts thing last year was. You know what you expect for 39-year-old version of Joe on a lousy team there, right?
Yeah.
This team's lousier than that for sure, especially running the football, and they need to run the football. So it's not a good fit for Joe to have any
And
success at all. So I'm just in talking about Joe as whatever that was, and the next time we see Joe here, it'll be Ring of Honor and like all
yeah.
of that, and they'll run all the tapes back and whatnot. Keep Justin Tucker out of it, of course, but and they won't show the field goal in Denver or whatever. But for me, I look at it and say, is he a capable thrower? Yes. Can he manage a game? Yes. Then he gets out of the pocket and really ended the game. He ended the game. I mean,
Yeah.
if you were sitting here, I'd tell him that. Like, that pick ended that their chances in a game where, like, maybe they block the next kick. Maybe they get the next tip ball. Maybe, flat, somebody falls down and Jerry Jeudy's not in coverage. And, that becomes the 82-yard touchdown pass that they need to make it a field goal game, which it felt like it was way too close until Flacco threw the pick.
Yeah. I'm trying not to be disrespectful here. Watching Joe over the course of the day, I had two words that kept coming to mind. Go home. I mean, I and he loves to play, right? And someone is paying him once again for an 18th season to play. So God bless, and he's in a way higher tax bracket than I would ever dream of being in. So, I don't say that to be disrespectful, but to answer your question, he'd be a disaster in Cincinnati because their offensive line stinks, just like the Browns' offensive line. I think the Browns' interior line is okay. Their tackles stink, and they didn't have Conklin on Sunday, so that
And then
makes a
you can't run the
difference.
ball.
But
Yeah.
you have, but there's that. And look, if there's perfect protection for Joe Flacco, can he still throw the ball around and have some success? Sure. How many teams in the league can provide truly perfect pass protection? I mean, even the great offensive lines are still going to surrender some pressure. And if there's even a hint of pressure, Joe can't move. I mean, he just can't. And you saw him throwing it at the feet of guys. You saw him inaccurate throwing it out of bounds, all of that.
Stuff that we saw 7 or 8 years ago here when the line didn't hold up and the running game wasn't there and
But even then,
the
he could still
receivers weren't
make.
special and
I don't feel like he can make those throws that are, unless it's all perfect,
then okay, the arm still plays, but if he has to move, whereas I thought 2 years ago, I thought he moved okay, but
Yeah,
I don't want to make this
that Browns
thing was special a year and a half ago. And again, that's the only and it
reason
was
he wound
five
up in a helmet
games.
Sunday, because no other team would put him in charge because he had that success that they could sell it to the fans. Now they can't sell it to the fans anymore, right?
Sure. I mean, they're going nowhere, and I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Stefanski, and they're
Here we
just
go again.
yeah. I mean, it's again, as you and I in our previous segment talked about, just how good it's been around here for the Ravens and on-field success and continuity, and not that it's perfect, but
Well, that's one of the reasons
it's a high
Rubenstein is
standard.
not throwing Elias out of the ship right now, because it looks like an imbalance. So keep him on, hold it together. Let's try to,
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know, but this is bad teams. The hardest thing to do is stop losing. We all know that, right? And once you start, and here we go again with the Browns, and that's all I could think about on Sunday. It was like, it's week two, you have a 40-year-old quarterback, and none of this is good enough. And the defensive line and poor Jim Schwartz trying to draw it up. And some weeks they'll keep it 10-3 at halftime or 13-3 at halftime. And then you can't have your quarterback go out and throw a pickle like that. That's all. I mean, that's it. I mean,
Oh,
and Joe knows that.
and not just that. I mean, think about it. They had a punt blocked. I mean, those are the kind of things that, frankly, the Ravens did last. Not Lamar didn't throw a pick, but they turned the, they didn't take care of the football, in the case of Derrick Henry, and they just, didn't do smart things at times where they needed to be smart and careful and on their P's and Q's. So, it's the Browns, right? I mean, how many times have you and I sat here and kind of like laughed at it? I mean, I don't wish any ill will towards Joe Flacco, of course not, but I mean, he's 40 years old. He can't
I
move.
just feel bad. It
Yeah, I
wasn't
mean,
Johnny Unitas running around in yellow pants at
but
Jack
it
Welch
wasn't great.
Stadium,
But it
but it
wasn't
certainly
great.
wasn't great.
Yeah.
And,
But that
on behalf
said,
of his family and kids, the fact that he made it back here to have
sure,
that
it was
moment
cool.
to get knocked out in Rocky III, you know what I mean? Like, literally, right? Like, whatever that was, it wasn't, but that does not time
Well,
away
and
him the glory of his deeds. And all that being said, where do the Ravens pick up the pieces here, and how do you even evaluate this? Because from the Ravens' perspective, it wasn't like a great effort. I mean, any way around, I mean, there's no way to look great at stopping Joe Flacco, knock yourself out. There's no way to sort of candy coat the fact that, they couldn't win by enough points. They won by 3.5 touchdowns, and we're like, well, it's pedestrian effort or whatever. But Detroit, Kansas City coming in. Kansas City looks like they're on the ropes a little bit. Detroit looks like they're coming offensively from where they were last week. This is where the season gets really interesting, bro, because they're 1-1. Bengals are 2-0, but don't have a quarterback, so I don't even know what that means. Steelers gave a game away at home against the Seahawks. Weird. And the league's weird. Russell Wilson was throwing bombs, should have won the game. So things happen in this league that it's never perfect. To quote King Harbaugh, but you try to survive it and get through it. The biggest concerns, to your point, like in the castle, the football side of this, all the pomp and circumstance of Ray Lewis and Steve Bisciotti hugging up, and looks like Steve needs to buy a razor with all that money he's got. I'm still concerned about the injuries. I'm concerned about the team itself and how they're going to match up against the Lions. And it's also a little bit of like, this offense and getting bottled up a little bit by the Schwartzes and stuff like that. I want to see that power game we saw a little bit more against the Bills, right? Especially
Yeah,
early.
I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, you look at this game, and I said it before. I mean, and you just alluded to it. When you face the Browns, especially when you face the Browns at home, it's a thankless task, right? I mean, you can't win by enough points.
It's
I mean,
homecoming.
I suppose if you win 51-0 or 63-0 or something absurd, but it's a thankless job, especially on the heels of what happened in Buffalo and the narrative that continues for this football team in a big picture sense. There's nothing you can do that people are going to say, oh, wow, that was, man, you just beat the Cleveland Browns. Holy cow, right? No, there's none of that, right? I mean, people scoff. But as I said, on a day when the offense had their difficulties getting going in the first half against a good Cleveland front, and again, I'll continue to say Cleveland has a good defense. I think the question for that group, for Schwartz and for Myles Garrett and that unit, is going to be, at what point do they kind of throw up their hands and just say, I mean, gosh, guys, like we held Baltimore to 10 points and 3 yards per play in the first half, and you guys couldn't do anything, right? I mean, that's kind of where it becomes, and you can only do that so many
See,
weeks.
I think that game could have stayed sloppy and stayed a better fight if the Browns didn't give it away offensively. And
I mean,
that's
they just
where
their
when
offense.
your defense is that
But that's my
good,
point.
that you go back to the 2001 Ravens, do a little history. You can't give the game away. And the only chance they have, and that's demoralizing as hell, to look up and see you lost by three touchdowns. I mean, it
Sure.
really is. On a
I mean,
day with a
I don't know.
stat sheet, you look and see what you did to Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson and say, man, we got to have a better chance of winning that game.
Well, but that's my point. How many weeks in a row can you do that before it starts to bleed into your performance and your focus? And that's where, I mean, that's why the 2000 Ravens are such a historic group, not just because they won a Super Bowl, not just because they had a great defense, because they didn't kill each other in the midst of a five-game touchdown drought, right? I mean, they held it together. Brian Billick held it together. The leaders of that locker room held it together in extreme circumstances. So, but for the Ravens themselves, I mean, yeah, the injuries. I mean, Marlon Humphrey came back out of the locker room in the fourth quarter, and he was moving and running and doing some stuff on the sideline to try to get loose. That tends to make me feel that the groin injury isn't too bad. But it's a groin injury. Even if it's minor, is that going to take him out of play for Monday night or the next couple weeks, right? Where they've got the big Monday night game against Detroit, and then they go to Kansas City, where you have a chance to, I don't know. I mean, the Chiefs or what, go to the Giants? I mean, I'm guessing they'll win that games, but even if they win, you'll have a chance to make the Chiefs 1-3, right? I mean, that's that regardless of what happens in week three, that's going to be your task. Or I mean, if they somehow lose to the Giants, it could be 0-4. You could completely bury them. But, beyond the injuries, beyond the big picture, the narrative of this team in January and protecting big leads, and which are there, and that nothing that was going to happen against the Browns was going to erase that. I feel really good about this football team as it pertains to the regular season, as it pertains to the AFC North, as it pertains to, their strengths. Their defense, I fully expected to be better against the Browns, to be better, generally speaking, than they were against Buffalo. The Jaire Alexander thing is interesting, no doubt, and they've got to get healthy. I'd still say the edge rush is still a relative question, right?
Hey, well, it's going to be tested now with teams that want to throw the ball.
Sure. So, and I think the other thing that came out of Sunday's game that didn't necessarily get a lot of attention, but go look at a snap count. Teddy Buchanan's a starting inside linebacker next to Roquan Smith. I mean, he played almost. I mean, Trenton Simpson got a couple series, but you look at the final snap count. Teddy Buchanan played 60 of 69 snaps. Now, granted, there was garbage time at the end there, and they pulled Roquan for a few plays, and they rested some other guys. But Trenton Simpson, he played 15 snaps. So even the timeshare that we saw in week one, that was almost a 50-50 split, Teddy Buchanan was the guy. And if
Well,
he was
this
the.
speaks to the defense saying, if you're playing well, you're on the field. If you're not, you're off the field,
Yeah.
right?
And you know what? I think that was an interesting part of this because, and this, maybe we spend a couple minutes and we can touch on Jaire Alexander more at some point. But the fact that he was inactive, and I had alluded to you talking about, based on the comments that I was hearing
Not ready
on
to play is
Wednesday,
the outcome of
I
week one.
kind of
The
thought,
coaching staff. So if he was mad at you, you'd say, hey, man, your coaches said you're
yeah,
just not ready to play.
sure. I mean, they said
Physically, wherever it is, you're not ready to get out there and do this right
I
now,
was
right?
not at all surprised that he did not play on defense. I was a little surprised that they went a step further and deactivated him. I thought, as you know, and I this isn't just the Ravens. This is just how the inner workings of an organization works, right? You have a lot of egos, right? You have a general manager, you have a head coach, you have scouts, you have assistant coaches, all of that. And they're all, as much as they're all on the same page most of the time, there can also be times where that doesn't fit quite as well because, I mean, Jaire Alexander, not that he was this big ticket item that they signed in terms of price because they got him for $4 million in mid-June. But if you rank their acquisitions in the offseason, he'd be near the top of the list,
Well,
right?
there's
I
a
mean, it,
level of expectation in the same way that Tyler O'Neill had that on the baseball field, you
Yeah.
know?
So I think what was interesting about this is it's very easy to draw a parallel with what? Marcus Williams last year. And Marcus Williams did not get benched until initially what? Week 8 against Cleveland was the first time that he sat. He played against Denver.
But he was an $18 million cap number,
Oh,
right?
sure. No, quite. Well, but the point is, you saw how long they tried to stick with him and try to make it work at and all of that. And let me be clear, I'm not saying that Jaire Alexander has been buried here, because I absolutely, there are plenty of times John Harbaugh will say something, or a coach will say something, or a general manager will say something, and you kind of say, oh, that's, you know, they're just saying that because that's all they can say. I genuinely believe John Harbaugh saying that Jaire Alexander, I expect to play great football for us. I expect he's going to be fine. He'll be out there very soon playing great ball for us. I think in John's mind and in their minds, this was about, hey, let's slow play this. Let's pump the brakes. Let's give you a couple weeks to practice. Get yourself in game shape. You missed 3.5 weeks, the final 3 weeks of training camp, on the heels of a season where you only played 7 games because of that same knee.
We're going to be a good team. We're going to need you in
Yeah, we
November,
want.
December, and we're going to have atrophy. Somebody's going to get hurt. We're going to need you to play.
We're going to need you to play, but at the same time, you're not on scholarship either. What you did against Buffalo was below the bar. So let's pump the brakes. We're going to put, you know, we've got Marlon and we've got Nate Wiggins, who had a big day on Sunday. We've got Awuzie. TJ Tampa played sparingly as the fourth corner in the
Made a
dime.
play, though. Made a
He
play.
did. No, he did. And look, I mean, Jaire Alexander, if he's not going to step up, then TJ Tampa will continue to take snaps away from him. But I think this was an interesting case study in terms of reacting to what happened in week one, where if they did not go through what they went through with Marcus Williams last year, I do wonder if Jaire Alexander would have been a healthy scratch on Sunday. I do wonder if Jaire Alexander would have played. And look, I think if you want to be a little more cynical about it, you could say, well, if you didn't deem him ready to play against the Browns, are you really going to have the confidence to put him out there against Detroit? Are you really going to have the confidence to put him out there against Kansas City in a couple weeks? So I think that's a fair question, but,
Well, the question is it physical or is it
and
mental?
that's the big thing. And I think, yes, you know, I think, I mean, clearly he had a PCL injury in his right knee midway through last year. That was a major problem in Green Bay. I mean, there was speculation and conjecture about that him and the team being on the same page as far as how they were managing the injury, all of that, right? And it led to the divorce in early June, right? For a player who was making a heck of a lot of money. They're Marlon Humphrey, you know, to put it in pretty
Not only a
simplistic
guy they
terms.
drafted well, a guy they paid after they
Yeah,
drafted him, yes.
absolutely. I mean, he's one of the highest paid corners in the league. So you have that. He had a good start to training camp. At the same time, 5 or 6 days into camp, he had his knee drained. And then 2 days after the first preseason game, he couldn't practice, and they were managing his knee, and they were managing his knee. And it was smart to do that. Let me be clear. I'm not saying that you have him go out there and practice at less than 100%, but he missed a lot of time. So,
Managing knees in the middle of August and thinking these guys are going to be able to run around
and
against the Buffalo Bills
well,
early September.
not so much even just that. How about the big picture question? And that's why, this is why I continue to remind people there's a reason why he was available for $4 million in mid-June. He might be a total bust for them this year. He might not be very good, but it's worth the upside if you can get him in a place where he's right physically, right enough physically to play. I don't even care what the number is, but he's in a position to help you in December and January. That's all this should be about. And that doesn't mean you just rest him that whole time, because it doesn't work that way either. I think a lot of people thought, oh, well, you know, they slow played Jaire the last 3 weeks of camp. And it's like, no, at some point you got to get out there and play, and you do have to practice, and you do have to be ready to compete at that kind of level. This isn't just like, you know, you don't just put these guys in bubble wrap and then think that they're going to be great, right? I mean, and that might be part of the issue of why the defense played the way they did against Buffalo. They didn't play in the preseason. But we also understand that you don't play in the preseason, and that means you don't lose two of those guys to season-ending injuries in a meaningless game,
Well, I
right?
was going to
So,
say, I mean, playing the Cleveland game this week felt a little like a nice preseason tune-up. It felt like there was a little bit of peril in the beginning, but in the end, and now they're 1-1, and the
Now
battleship's
it's like,
sort of
okay.
righted, but they got some football under their belt to know Jaire Alexander, not good enough. Hey, I tell you what, this Buchanan kid stepping up. Things we can do in the offense. What are we waiting on Pat Ricard for? The things that we'd like to do once we get him back, once we get back to full health. And that being said, the health of this team, not perfect with Kyle Van Noy, the pass rush, all of that. There are definitely some question marks going into this long week against Detroit, and health becomes one of them in week three.
It does. And I mean, the good thing is that it doesn't sound like any of these injuries they had on Sunday are like catastrophic, but
They're not
yeah.
Joe Burrow for 3 months.
Right. And you made a point, and I meant to touch on it then, but then the conversation kind of
Hope it
went,
was a good one.
oh no, you made a point where you kind of talked about this idea of surviving and just taking care of business. And you look at the rest of the AFC North. I mean, obviously the Ravens took care of business against the Browns. Cincinnati, they win the game, but they lost in the sense that Joe Burrow, he might be out for the season. I mean, they're saying 3 months if he has to have foot surgery, toe surgery. I mean, that puts you in mid-December. I mean, are they even going to be in a position where you're even going to want to try to bring him back at that point in time? I mean, maybe they'll get better news and maybe he'll avoid that and maybe he's back in a month and a half. But, and look, we have to acknowledge this too. The narrative on Lamar a couple years ago was what? He can't stay healthy, right? I mean, that was the concern. Joe Burrow has been way more injury prone than Lamar Jackson at this point. I mean, let's just call it what it is at this point. He can't stay healthy. And that's not a knock on him as much as it's just the product of he's had some injuries and their offensive line stinks. And the offensive line stinking has been, there's hand-wringing about the Ravens offensive line, and I get it. I get it. Daniel Faalele is a below average NFL starter in my mind. We'll see about Voorhees, right? I mean, Rosengarten had a really rough week one, right? And is in his second year, and there's still, he's got a long way to go that until he becomes like a Pro Bowl type right tackle. We get that. But man, you see some of these teams in the league and the offensive lines they trot out there. I mean, knowing the injuries that Joe Burrow has had, I mean, for the Bengals to have not done more with their offensive line. And I get it. Hey, they paid
Well, the
Jamar Chase.
Bengals played the Browns last week, and we played the Browns, and the Bengals got bottled up by the Browns last
Sure.
week.
Oh, no doubt. I think, I mean, that was part of it. And I also, the other point I had made to you was keep in mind the Browns offense made the Bengals defense look pretty good too. So that was part of it as well. But, so much of this, win the game, check it off, keep yourself in position. Keep yourself relatively healthy, survive, advance. We talk about the war of attrition all the time in the NFL, right? 17 games, and it's going to be 18 games here at some point in the next couple of years, right? I mean, it's inevitable. So much of it is about surviving. So much of it is not winning the game necessarily, but not losing the game. And we saw the Ravens lose a game in week one that they absolutely should have won, right? So you hope. You hope you finally learn the lesson at some point, right? And I don't want to bring that up too much because we spent plenty of time talking about that last week. But you just look at the rest of the division, you look at the rest of the league, and you see what happens in terms of injuries, you see what happens in terms of personnel, you see what happens in terms of coaching decisions, all of that. And the Ravens aren't immune to that. And the Ravens have dealt with some of that, no question. But they went out there, and unlike Pittsburgh, who was a favorite against Seattle playing at home, they didn't take care of business, and you saw them shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, that kickoff play was unbelievable. I saw the highlight of that. I'm like, what was he thinking?
I think he
But
thought the ball was going to roll in through the end zone.
yeah,
Yeah, I mean,
or just like college, and if you just let it hit the end zone in college, it's just a touchback, right? It's not that way in the NFL. But you look at those plays and you look at what happened with Cincinnati with Joe Burrow now, who knows when and if he's going to be back. Man, it's just count your blessings, right? I mean, count your blessings that, okay, the Ravens had a few injuries on Sunday. Wasn't perfect. The offense was sluggish early on, but they won. They're mostly upright. They've got one of the very best quarterbacks in the world. They've got one of the very best running backs in the world. Sunday, notwithstanding as far as the
Tell you
numbers.
what, DeAndre Hopkins, a Hall of Famer.
I mean,
My God.
I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, you kind of forget about it. And it's funny because at a couple different points in that first half, I even asked a couple of the reporters sitting close to me in the press box. I'm like, has Hopkins even been on the field? Because they don't play him a whole lot. I mean, he doesn't play. They're very specific and deliberate on when they want to use him. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's like five snaps a game, but you know how many snaps he played out of 56 on Sunday?
20,
Or no, sorry, I looked at this incorrectly. 10.
10.
He played 10 snaps. So now there will be times where he has to play more because it will become one of those deals where it's like, hey, if he's in the game, Lamar's going to throw him the ball. But the point
Well,
is,
man, Bateman and Flowers are 99% guys, right?
well, and also when you bring Likely back, I mean, they're going to be running more two tight end sets and all of that. But you see this offense evolving. I mean, look at Tylan Wallace. Look at DeVontez Walker didn't even play an offensive snap in week one, and he catches two touchdowns. Now, that's not saying that means DeVontez Walker is going to become a starting wide receiver, but the point is
It's an ensemble now, yeah.
you have an ensemble and so much diversification, right? It's diversifying your portfolio of what you
Well,
can do.
Ricard's not even on the field to like
Right. I mean, no
to give you
Ricard,
a
no
chess
Likely.
piece.
Right. I
Yeah.
mean, no Likely. And it's feeling more and more like Likely's better than, I mean, this, and it felt this way at times last year, but Mark Andrews, I mean, it's not, he's clearly not the guy he was a couple years ago, or at least it's certainly looking that way. Now,
It's
maybe,
shrinking. There's no
yeah.
question.
And his target share is just not the same. But the point is with Hopkins, here's someone that you brought in, and I said this to you the day that they signed him. This is Odell Beckham at the appropriate price point, right? Odell Beckham had moments. Now, you're hoping that Hopkins can stay healthier than Beckham did 2 years ago. But Beckham had his moments, and he even had some games where you'd say, hey, that kind of sort of looked like the old Odell Beckham. The problem was always paying him $15 million. Hopkins is making, five or whatever it is with incentives. So,
Ain't no telling me at this point Hopkins can't kill you. You know what I
I
mean? In
just,
January on a cold night to go up in the air and just come down with the
it
ball. I
might
mean,
be, it, I mean, it literally might be a thing where he makes one or two plays a game, and some of those might be bigger than others, but it comes down to, can he win on the outside? Yes. Can he be a red zone target for you? Yes. Can he catch 50-50 balls? Yes. So who was doing that with consistency for them the last couple years prior to his arrival? At times, Mark Andrews. Bateman became more of a deep threat last year. So I don't want to completely, but it's a different skill set. And Zay Flowers is the number one. He's the guy that's going to get most of the targets, and they're going to throw the ball to him at any level. And he's going to, it's funny. There was one example, one of the times he has the ball in the open field. I think the Ravens have two of the most terrifying guys to try to tackle in the open field. Three, because I don't want to forget about Lamar. I mean, no duh, as I'm sitting here saying this. But Lamar Jackson, for what he can do. Derrick Henry for the physicality, but not just the physicality, but he can also just run away from you as well. And then Zay Flowers with his change of direction. I mean, what a nightmare trying to tackle any of
Barry
those.
Sanders off the dime when he gets the ball, right?
I mean, he's not going to run through you, but man, he'll turn on a dime and change directions and make you look silly and break your ankles. So, man, you just talk about all those guys that I just named. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Justice Hill and his receiving ability. I mean, Keaton Mitchell's been a healthy scratch the last couple of weeks. We'll see,
See, a
especially
lot of
now.
times they put Hill out there to protect Lamar to me too, because
Yeah, well,
he's a,
he's
you
their
know.
best blitz pickup guy, no question.
Yeah.
But he also can catch some passes out of the backfield,
But you can't play 14 guys. So we're talking about Ricard, we're
There's one
talking about
ball.
Hopkins,
There's
we're
one
talking about
football.
Likely, we're talking to, you can't play
Sure.
two tight ends and three wide receiver and fat
Well,
back. And you
and
know what I mean?
that's.
They're, and this is where Monken really creates a circus here.
Well, it's Todd Monken having to keep everyone. Happy is the wrong word because wide receivers want the ball on every single play, right? I mean, involved
Engaged.
to feel valued, right? To feel worth, right? To feel like you have a meaningful role in the offense. And I think that's where Monken and Lamar Jackson are key. And this goes back to my point about like the league being week to week and everything that you have to do to persevere and to win on a weekly basis. Check your egos at the door. Right? I mean, you're already, I mean, look at the Miami Dolphins right now. I mean, PU, what a disaster. Mike McDaniel might be fired by the time someone hears you and our conversation. I mean, that's he's on watch. I mean, he's on notice. Whether it's this week or a month from now, that feels like that's coming to an end. But I mean, and look, they've had personnel injuries, all kinds of stuff. But you look at where that team was a couple years ago and how explosive and amazing that offense looked and
Dude, the Orioles
everything.
fired their manager in May. It happens quick, right? I mean,
Sure. I
it just
mean,
happened. I have friends that are Dolphins fans that felt like they were on to something,
right.
and
And that now it's looking like, oh, they're heading towards a rebuild, right? I mean, new coach. I mean, what's going to happen with Tua? I mean, Tyreek Hill, it kind of feels like one, he's going to be traded, but two, does who wants him?
yeah,
I mean,
right.
because
Yeah.
he's so high priced compared to like, and obviously the off-field domestic battery accusation, like, that
Is he gonna change? Is he gonna
is the
change your
juice
team?
worth the squeeze of
Yeah.
taking that on? Oh, so, but my point with all of that is, man, a lot of egos involved in all of this. So the teams that can handle that, can absorb that and manage that and keep it, not that it's always kumbaya, because it's not, and we don't get a full picture of what goes on behind closed doors. But the teams that do the best job of managing that, and obviously you have to have the talent. We all understand that part of it. Man, that's why I that's where I push back the most with criticism of John Harbaugh, right? Everything that happened last week, I mean, should have gone for it on 4th and 3, absolutely. Shouldn't have punted there. Blown leads, yada 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 yada. Right? He's not perfect. Not saying he is. But to think how he's managed a team culture as long as he has over different generations of players at this point in time. I mean, you talk about the end of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed to Joe Flacco in the midst of the Joe Flacco era and now the Lamar era. And you think about how little locker room duress and hurt feelings and guys running their mouth and unhappy, like how little of that there's been. Not that there hasn't been some, but that's hard to do. Because you see Mike McDaniel, he was the flavor of the month 2 or 3 years ago. And now I'm already firing him before he's even been fired, right? But so I think that's a really underrated part of making all this work and making all this work over 17 games. And that's where, the Ravens, the fact that they rebounded the way they did, and the fact that it was the two phases of the game that propped them up that had failed them in week 1, and that happened in week 2 when the offense got off to a slow start. That was good to see. Not making any bold proclamation. It was a win over the Browns, but just from what you try to take away, that to me was what was encouraging, that the defense and the special teams did the heaviest lifting until the offense found its rhythm in the second half.
Here's Luke Jones. He's Baltimore Luke. We will be getting together several times this week because the game's extended to Monday night with Lions. We're going to take a look around the league, talk some more about the kicking game, as well as looking ahead to Detroit instead of looking back toward Joe Flacco. And just kind of a weird game on Sunday. Great celebration. Luke and I chatted at length about the 75 Colts and the return there and my beautiful day over at Union Brewing. We're going to have a beautiful day in Catonsville on Tuesday. I'm doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some fresh Raven scratch-offs to give away. Also going to be joined by Councilman Pat Young, who's running for Baltimore County Executive, and also my lawyer pal, Chad Kaz, and I are going to talk Springsteen and 7th grade civics for some folks out there. Also, our Curio Wellness 27th anniversary. Whew, man, I'm eating good in the neighborhood. I'm telling you right now, I got the final four this week of our tastiness. Make you want some chicken and rice and some black beans or maybe some delicious meatballs and some garlic toast. All of it coming your way. All of it brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness. Baseball season rounding out here over the next 2 weeks. Luke's going to be down at the ballpark later. I'm going to have some baseball thoughts as well. It's a month here to take a little breath, and certainly with the proceedings in America, and just enjoy these Sundays with football because, like, they're back a little bit. This Sunday, we get the whole day to watch. We get two games on Monday night this week at 7 and 10. So, all we need, the opioid for the masses, right? The opiate for the masses, football, and more football. I'm Nestor. We got more football ahead. Luke and I, we're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.